It isn't what we say or think that defines us, but what we do. Jane Austen. This is the What We Do by Kira Kazantsev podcast. Hey guys, welcome back to another week of What We Do. It's Masters Week, which means the golf world is aflutter, Tiger Woods is back, and it's certainly an exciting week in sports. So what better than to have a bit of a golf theme this week with an amazing, trailblazing woman in golf? I'm so excited to welcome Susie Whaley to the show. She's currently the vice president of the PGA of America. In fact, she's the first woman ever elected to serve as an officer for the PGA of America, and soon she will be the first ever female president of the PGA of America. So I was very excited to get to talk to her. She's recognized as one of the country's top golf instructors. Susie has her own business and is an incredible business leader in her own right. In 2003, she famously qualified and participated in the Greater Hartford Open, becoming the first woman since Babe Zaharias in 1945 to qualify for a PGA Tour event, which means she was out there playing against the guys. She is a sports business leader, an inspiring role model, and an incredible figure to look up to for thousands and thousands of little girls in the history that she is making as the first female president of the PGA of America. In the spirit of Masters Week, I hope everybody enjoys this golf-themed podcast. Whether you're a seasoned golfer or golf is very new to you, everybody can get something out of this because golf has life lessons that can be applied to all walks of life. So I hope you enjoy. Hi, Susie.
Hi, Kira. Great to be on with you.
Great. So, Susie, you are the current vice president of the PGA of America, and you will be the first female president in November. How does that make you feel that you are the first?
Well, you know, people ask me that all the time, and I appreciate the question. Of course, it's an honor and a privilege. But for me, it's really not about being the first. It's so incredibly exciting, but I'm a PGA professional, and I'm excited to represent the 29,000 members we have across the country.
But you are certainly, I think, an inspiration to women all across the country that play golf, that are either just amateur players or they are aspiring LPGA pros. What is your message to them about breaking down those barriers that no matter what, they do have a place in the game?
I do believe that wholeheartedly. I love to play golf. I have always loved to play golf since I was a little girl. We have two daughters that play the game at a competitive level. Both, one played in college, who's now graduated. The other's currently playing in college. And I've always told my family that golf is a game they can play for a lifetime. And I would tell that to any woman or young girl that was listening, that golf is for everyone and it's a sport you'll love. It gives you health and wellness and friends and family, camaraderie, business opportunities. You know, I could go on and on, but I'm completely biased. But I love the game, and my passion is to get others to learn to play it and enjoy it.
So I would love if you could share a little bit about your background, how you grew up, and how you first came to love the game of golf.
I grew up in Syracuse, New York, so we didn't play a whole lot of golf because it was cold probably 9 months of the year. But for the 3 or 4 months that we had the chance to, that's where I learned how to play the game. I had a mom who was an avid golfer. She was just looking for a pal to play golf with, and my older sister was a competitive swimmer. And so my mom really hadn't introduced me yet to the game. And when I was 9, my parents belonged to a country club in Syracuse, New York. And she was called off the course because her daughter was in a swimsuit hitting golf balls on the range with the boys from the swimming pool. So that obviously was not allowed. You know, it was one of those moments in time. I think my mom could have done one of two things. She could have yelled at me because certainly I knew I wasn't supposed to be over there in a swimsuit. But instead she said, "Do you like this?" And I said, "I love it." And she said, "Well, let's go get you an outfit." And that was like the beginning of me just, you know, my poor parents, because every day I would clamor to go to the course and be able to go to the range and get on the golf course. And really, that was a time where young girls really weren't playing golf, and it really wasn't something that was acceptable. And so my parents would try to explain to me, well, you can't play today, but maybe next week you could play. And I just, you know, bombarded them with, well, when can I go? When can I go? When can I go? And finally, my mom just found other resources and other places for me to love it. And I credit her with, you know, I didn't grow up with obstacles with my parents. It was always opportunity. And I never saw it any other way than, well, if we can't play here, let's just go find someplace else where we can. And that's what we did.
One of my biggest questions for you is when you mentioned in how you grew up that you weren't a part of a time that women were really accepted on the golf course or young girls weren't encouraged to play golf. It just wasn't a thing. Whereas today that's definitely changed. So what is the PGA of America doing to include more women in the game of golf, to grow it at a younger age? And what can the culture of golf do to include many diverse groups and not just women?
Yeah, we're excited about some of the things we're doing at the PGA of America for women and girls. But I think it's important to really talk as well about kind of the culture of the game and how it's evolved. And while at the time when I was young, as you mentioned, it just wasn't a thing that a lot of girls did. I grew up playing a lot with my mom, but I also grew up playing with boys. I played on a boys' high school golf team. There just weren't a lot of girl role models around that I could look to. But really, I wasn't aware of that. It was more about loving the game, playing golf, and having the opportunity to do that. So my parents brought me places where I could play. Today, it's exciting because since 2011, we have 600,000 more young girls playing the game, which is thrilling. Should we get more than that? Of course we should. We're striving to do that. We have programs like PGA Junior League, which is a program for boys and girls ages 13 and under. They play from the same tee. They're teammates. They play a scramble format, high-fiving each other and cheering each other on for the good shots and encouraging each other on the bad ones. And it's really transformed the way we've delivered golf for golf professionals, because typically we're an individual sport and PGA Junior League is a team sport. And so families have really gravitated to that and seen the value in that. So it's exciting and fun. Drive, Chip and Putt, we're partners in that endeavor, which is tons of young girls standing on the 18th hole at Augusta National. You know, who would have guessed when I was 9 years old that we'd have the opportunity to do that. And then LPGA Girls Golf, which is really the impetus for so many young girls coming into the game, that PGA professionals and LPGA professionals captain these wonderful, wonderful groups where young girls get to learn the game together in a non-intimidating atmosphere with a professional. And we're just seeing great growth. And then we have PGA Women's Clinics across the country that we're partnering with Jane Blaylock and her company this year around the country to deliver opportunities for women to either return to the game, learn the game, spend a day with PGA and LPGA professionals, corporate clients that they may have and want to entertain, and just bringing them to the course and getting them on course in a situation where they'll feel comfortable. So we're excited about what's happening and excited about the fact that so many facilities have really turned the tide and don't have restrictions anymore and are welcoming women to golf and the culture and the community of the game. And that's exciting. We have work to do, though, and we still have challenges. So we're on it.
Good, good. So one of my biggest things when I talk with my friends and my contemporaries is trying to share with them how much golf has enriched my life, both personally and professionally. So if you were talking to a young 20-something in her first job, she's never picked up a golf club in her life, what is your like recruitment pitch to her of why she should play golf?
You know, I have one, believe it or not. I know you're not surprised.
I believe you. Of all people, you would.
I would tell you, but first I have to give you a little personal anecdote. So my daughter, who is 23, is in her first corporate position. She works in Hartford. And she called me last year and she said, Mom, I want to start a golf league for my friends at the company. And how should I go about that? How should I get started? And so we talked through it. And I said, well, you're going to have to really word of mouth, put up some flyers, make sure people aren't intimidated, make sure they realize they don't need equipment. They don't need a fancy outfit. They don't need golf shoes, that we would welcome them, that we find a PGA professional to deliver that programming and and have it at a time that's convenient for them after work, where they want to get outside, get some healthy environment, have some wellness, be with their friends, and learn the game in this great, fun environment. And immediately, she had 20 people sign up. She now has a whole golf league at her company of over 55 women. So what I would say to young women and young men is just go ahead and ask, because we have professionals all over the country who can't wait to have you come and learn the game. We have the equipment for you. We can provide anything that you need as far as setup, marketing, communication to your friends and your peers and your company. And we just want to get you in the game as fast as possible, because we want you to enjoy it, have fun, but also realize the business benefits you can attain from it.
So you obviously realized all of these things at a fairly early age. Was golf always a part of your career goals?
No. For me, sports were always a part of my career goals. I am an avid athlete. I love all sports. I was a four-sport athlete growing up, mostly because of where I grew up, because of the seasonality that things had. So I wanted to be an Olympic ski racer. That was my dream.
Wow.
So I ski raced all through high school. I went away to a ski racing boarding school. Not to say I didn't love golf, but you know, golf was never intended to be my profession. If I wasn't going to be an Olympian, I was going to go to law school. So you can only imagine, you know, now I think, oh my goodness, thank heavens, the tides turned and golf became part of my world, because I owe so much to the game. I met my husband through the game. I have two beautiful children because of the game. I have my business because of the game. I have friendships that I can't imagine not having because of the game. And I have something that I can do with my family for the rest of my life. So for me, it was an incredible choice, and I'm so thrilled that that's the way things worked out.
Can you share what it's like to travel as an LPGA golfer?
I can. I certainly can't even think about it today, and I'll kind of explain that. But when I played, and I'm going to age myself here, but this was in the early 90s, and it was really a domestic tour then. We traveled the United States. We didn't have cell phones, obviously. We caravaned in cars because we certainly didn't have any money. And so for us, we, you know, pulled our money together and ate where we could. And we all just loved the game. I made some of my greatest friends at that period of time playing, but it was challenging. It's like any new job, any new role. I mean, that's what it is. It's a job. People tend to forget that while it's a sport, every week you have to make a paycheck. We didn't have a company paying us. If you didn't play well, there was no check, but you still have to pay your caddy. You still have to pay for your expenses and your hotel bill. It's very, very difficult to earn money your first year on tour because you're trying to navigate the courses. You're not familiar with them and other tour players are. So you're learning so much about how to live on your own and travel on your own and try at the same time to perform at the highest level of the game against the best female athletes in the world in the game. So I would tell you that I would never trade that experience. It's one that tests you and challenges you and puts you outside your comfort zone and makes you just better in so many different facets. Today's LPGA player, whom I can't speak for, obviously, but I can only imagine, they're traveling the world and doing the same thing. And for them to be able to manage that and organize their time and go to countries where cultures are different and languages are different week in and week out is so incredibly impressive. And the level of play on the LPGA Tour now, not taking away anything from those that won when I played, but the overall level of play across all LPGA players is just tremendous and fun to watch, and their athleticism. And I'm just enamored by the LPGA.
So as a player yourself, or having observed since, what has been one of the most thrilling moments that you've gotten to be a part of, either in the LPGA or just golf in general?
For me, qualifying and then competing in a PGA Tour event was probably a competitive highlight for me. Probably one of the most exciting, scary moments of my life.
You know, can you explain that for the non-golfers? What does that mean?
Sure. So I qualified to play on the PGA Tour, which was against men, obviously the best male golfers in the world at TPC River Highlands. It was called the GHO. It was in 2003. And I played in that event against the men from the same tee, which at the time was around 7,000 yards, a little shorter, shy of 7,000 yards, which typically at the time for me was about 800 yards longer than I typically played in a competitive tournament, which for the non-golfer and golfer, that would be like adding two par fours to your score, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, it was a moment in time for me that I trained incredibly hard. I had a 9-year-old and a 6-year-old at the time and a husband, a full-time job that I was working at close to 80 to 100 hours a week as a head golf professional, was trying to train at the same time to play against the best men in the world. And I'm incredibly proud of that week and that my daughters know that I did it and took the opportunity to do it. It was incredibly challenging, but incredibly gratifying and probably definitely my competitive highlight. It's my favorite moment in golf. And I would tell you my favorite moment in golf is the day my daughters walked down the fairway with their clubs in their own hands, meaning their bags on their back, playing golf with my husband and with me together as a family. And that's a day I'll never forget.
Aw. Well, so speaking of your family, you mentioned that you work hundreds of hours in your own business and you maintain this incredible golf career while also balancing a family life. So how did you do that?
I mean, it was hard. I think it's hard for any family that is a dual household working family. And, you know, but you manage it and you realize very quickly how to organize your time well. You manage, you can't be great at everything, you know, that you have to prioritize. And I think, you know, the motto in our house has always been be where your feet are. Because if you're where your feet are, your attention is where they should be. So when we were with our children, it was 100% with our children. And when I was at work, we tried to maintain that it was 100% dedication to work. And if I was playing or working my game or playing competitively, then my full attention was on that. And I have an incredible support system of friends and family that helped us through those really, really difficult times, like many of your audience do as well. Because you can't do it by yourself and you need that support system because there's days you go to sleep thinking, oh my goodness, I only got a quarter of my list done, right? And tomorrow I have a whole new list. And I think you just have to be at peace with that and realize that just keep working and striving for your goals and realize where your priorities lie for you and your interests and your family. And you'll be able to figure that out.
So when you talk about having this great support system, I wonder if you could talk about any mentors that you've had in your life that have really inspired you to be your best self and to get to where you are today.
I've had so many mentors. I don't know how long you want me to go, but I mean, my mother, first and foremost, was an incredible mentor. I have an incredible sister who has been a support system for me throughout my life, my husband. But as far as careers are concerned, you know, I can tell you that my very first PGA professional, Joe Tesori, who taught me the game since I was 14 years old, has always been a mentor for me and guided me and is really the reason I'm a PGA professional today. Jim Flick was my first person that I worked for as a teacher in the game after I came off the tour. And how lucky I was to have him as a mentor and to guide me and shape me and help me understand the intricacies of working with people and helping them with their games and the technical part of the game. Martin Hall has been a great inspiration to me and really helped me learn how to teach the game to a multitude of people in ways that I can never pay back. And in that respect, I mean, I could go on and on, but there's just been so many, and I hate to have forgotten anyone, but you look at the Lynn Dowdies, who's from KPMG, who has mentored me, the CEO of KPMG, and through their Women's Summit, which is really the key awareness for that is to inspire greatness amongst others and those that come behind you. Renee Powell, who is instrumental in my career in really not pushing me, but really sharing with me the things that she believes can be accomplished within the golf industry and the struggles that she's overcome. And And when you talk to somebody like Renee Powell, you realize very quickly you could never do the things you're doing without those that came before you that were brave enough to take steps forward. And so I owe a great deal of gratitude to Renee Powell. And there's just so many that I could list that, but without that and without that support, it's much more difficult to tread the way on your own. And it's much more fun to do it with others. Yeah. So, I think leadership is all about empowering others to succeed. And I've had incredible leaders that have helped me do that.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure there's plenty of people out there that would love to have any advice you could give them on starting your own business, on building your own brand, because that's a big part of what you do. So what have been some of the biggest challenges or lessons learned out of building your own business and building that brand as an expert in your field?
I think the challenges for me have been, while you may be an expert in certain areas, certainly it's best to seek out others that are better than you in certain areas as well. So for example, when you're building out your communication and your marketing, if you're starting your own business and you don't feel like that's really a strength in your background, seek out the person that is closest to you that is in that area and ask them to sponsor, really mentor you and share with you. When you share your business plan with them, take that critical feedback because their background is in that specific area. My background is economics in school, but then, my background has really been a passionate coach and teacher. So my time is spent in that space. It's not spent in marketing, for example. So when I was looking at how can I get more eyes on our materials? What do I need from Google Analytics? How do I multiply what I'm doing to a larger market? I sought out help and expertise from people who did that for a living. And in the beginning, that's what I didn't do and I wish I'd had. The other thing, I just spent way too much money. I think all of us think, well, if I just get that, my business is going to be a little better, or the brand new, shiny, newest item is going to make the business better. And I tell you that if I had to do it again, I would stick to my game plan of my value exchange with my consumer is the most important interaction I can possibly have is my own business. And is that particular thing that I'm thinking about purchasing going to help that value exchange? And if it doesn't, it doesn't fly for the filter. But when I started my businesses, I really just bought into, well, I need the best, I need the newest, I need the shiniest, because that's what they're expecting. And typically your consumer is really just looking for that value exchange where they leave and feel like they had a great experience and that they want to come back. And if whatever you're thinking about putting into your business can't do that, I would tell you to not do it.
So overall, the time that you've spent as an instructor, what are kind of your most fulfilling moments? What do you love most about your role as a coach and a teacher?
I just love to be with people, and that's just the truth. And for me, it's funny because some people will ask me, well, you only teach people who are good, right? And I always laugh about that because some of my favorite moments are with people who've never played the game, who come and get the ball in the air for the first time or share with me a story that has kept them away from the game. And I know how brave it is to come and take a lesson if that's you and you felt like, well, gosh, I want to, but I don't know. I'm intimidated. I've never done it. And then that person is in front of me. I look at that as an honor and a privilege. And I do everything I can to ensure that that experience that they have that day is fulfilling and worth their time. And for me, that's the most satisfying thing. When somebody leaves my lesson to you, whether they're 5 years old or 85 years old, whether they're elite tour player or whether they're brand new to the game, whether they're incredibly athletic or whether they share with me that they really aren't athletic at all. My favorite moment is when they say to me, I can't wait to come back. I can't wait to do this again.
Ever wonder where you can get one of those awesome custom Snapchat geofilters? Or maybe you're thinking about starting your own podcast or lifestyle brand, but you don't know how to go about getting your logos and branding set up. Socialyte has you covered. Started by fierce female entrepreneur Alexa Rogers, Socialyte Design creates custom Snapchat geofilters, custom printables, logos, and can help make your wedding, bachelorette, birthday, or any event even more special. Lucky for you, she's offering What We Do listeners an awesome deal. Just use code WHATWEDO at sociallightdesign.etsy.com and all first-time clients will receive 10% off your first order. That's coupon code WHATWEDO at social, S-O-C-I-A-L, light, L-I-G-H-T, design.etsy.com. And you can check them out at Social Light Design on Instagram. Now back to the show.
So something that I struggle with as a golfer, so I guess this is kind of a personal, selfish question, and I'm sure maybe some other women might relate to, is sometimes I get out on the golf course and it can be so intimidating, like you mentioned. You think that everybody's watching, you think that everybody is judging you, and if you, you know, duff that shot, then it's the end of the world. So what's your advice to women to kind of get over that and just realize that no one cares, it doesn't matter?
It's so true, because everybody else is focused on their own game, right? You want to have people not focused on their own game. They're so focused on their own game, half the time they're not even watching you and you think they're watching you. So I would say, first and foremost, that feeling is real, right? We can't just discount it. So whether you're on the first tee for the first time in a corporate league, or whether you're out at a charity event, or whether you're just playing with friends for the first time, it's the same feeling I had on the first tee at the GHO. Nervousness is nervousness, mm-hmm. right? And you don't want to embarrass yourself, and you want to look like you know what you're doing, and you don't want to act like you don't know what you're doing. So I tell people all the time, try not to take too much time, because too much time over the golf ball freezes you. So work with somebody to give you a great little routine that you can count on and know you can do well. So for example, a great routine would be, all right, I'm on the first hole. I'm going to take out my whatever club is your favorite club, because that's the other thing people tend to do. They think they have to hit a driver, for example, because that's what you're supposed to hit. I would tell you, if you're nervous and you're on the first hole, hit your favorite club. Forget about the driver. Just hit the driver's the favorite, grab the driver. But grab your favorite club out of the bag, take one practice swing, walk behind the ball, pick out your target, walk up the ball, and right before you hit the ball, I want you to say three words in your head, and that's it. That's all you get is three. So it can be something like in the fairway, right? Over the water, on the green, something incredibly positive. Take a deep breath and make your swing and go. Because what happens to most people is, if you allow your brain to start to function on every single thing you're supposed to do right, all right, I need to grip it like this, make sure I have my posture right. Is the ball in the right place? Are my hands look good? Is my chin up? Are people watching me? Oh gosh, did I take the right club? You've already frozen yourself. And it's not enjoyable.
You sound like my inner monologue. I mean,
exactly. I mean, people have these checklists, right? And if we can try to eliminate some of that checklist with some positive talk, it doesn't mean that you're going to hit a perfect shot. Don't get me wrong. You may still miss it. But at least you've gotten to the point where you realize, all right, this is the 20-page checklist is it's not working. So let's just have some fun. I'm going to grab my favorite club. I'm going to hit it into the fairway, and off we're going to go. And once you get through that first couple shots, you know, you'll find that your body will relax a little. And what you've worked on with your professional, or what you worked on at the range, all of a sudden it comes back. Because I always laugh that people think, well, how could I have lost my swing in one day? I played great yesterday and I'm horrible today.
Right.
you can't lose your swing in a day. I know half your audience is saying, absolutely you can, Susie. That's inaccurate. I have. But it's really more of, it's not that you lost your swing. It's that you're thinking about 14 things at work. You're late to pick up your children. You got to the club late because somebody cut you off. Now you've got the 20-page checklist. You're not thinking about it. And if you miss the first three shots, you're like, oh my gosh, this is, why am I here mm-hmm. today? Right. And then the round just goes bad. So I always beg my students, you know, when you get there, enjoy it. Even if you start out poorly, because let's say you have a 20 handicap, for example. If you have a 20 handicap, I always look at it this way. You get 20 misses. Mm-hmm. Right? And people look at it the opposite way. They think they have to hit those first three shots great. I look at it as, okay, if you miss the first three, you still have 17 more you get to miss.
Great.
Right? Before you're done. And I think people tend to relax. Oh, you know, what's a big deal? So what? I missed the first two. That's not a problem. And it just will make your day better. And then I would tell women,
everywhere that are listening that think they're not good at golf to understand that even if you go play with men, oftentimes they have bad days too.
Of course. Right?
So at the end of the day, don't judge against who you're with. Just set your own goal for the day. And maybe your own goal for the day is that you're going to have double par on every hole from wherever you're playing from. And that's your goal for the day. And if you get three under that double par, that's something to celebrate. And I realize par is the supposed standard. But for people to want to grow and for people to want to continue to play, you have to find little successes in everything you do. And maybe it's, I don't want to have more than three putts today. I want to get out of the bunker in one time every time I play. Set some little goals and you'll find that you'll have more fun trying to achieve those than trying to worry about showcasing your skills to whomever mm-hmm. you're with.
So obviously, when you play with people that are of an equal level to your golf, you're able to really take an objective look at things that might come up in the game that bother you about the rules or pet peeves or things like that. So is there anything in how the game is set up with rules or what bad habits people tend to do that you would like to change and point out that maybe people can keep in mind?
I would say if you're a gentleman that's listening to the podcast, I would say please stop for a woman to hit if she's hitting on a different tee than you are. Because I would say that's a big pet peeve for me is if I'm playing in a group and I'm playing on a different tee than somebody when they forget that I haven't hit yet. Yeah. So I would say just be aware because some women play from a tee that's farther back than some men. So if the women are listening, you know, don't just drive past that tee that the people are with you that are playing. I know it's not on purpose, but it typically is taken as a little bit rude. I would say play fast. Please don't take more than one practice swing. That is an incredible waste of time and annoying. Yeah. So one practice swing is plenty, and then hit the ball. If you're in a really serious situation where it's obvious you're in long grass, you have no idea how to stand, I understand that taking more than one is probably appropriate, but I think one practice swing is great. And, you know, I think if you're playing with friends and you're not looking to worry about your handicap or score, you know, don't be afraid to pick up. If you're just, you know, we always call those it's okay rules. You know, if you're out of the hole or you're just not enjoying the hole or you think that people are coming up behind you quickly, you know, it's okay. Just pick the ball up and get yourself onto that next tee so you can move on. So, you know, those are just a couple. I think the only other thing that I would share is fixing your ball mark on the green, which is the mark the ball makes when it hits the green. Learning how to do that is really important because a fixed ball mark heals in 2 or 3 days and really makes the green stay nice. And an unfixed ball mark doesn't heal for 2 or 3 weeks. So it just takes a second to fix it. You know, any PGA professional can teach you how to do it really quickly to save the root system. That's really key. So whatever course you're playing can keep its maintenance up, makes it really easy for the greens crew when people go ahead and fix those.
Okay, awesome. I will also replay that all the time so that I remember. I think I do most of those things.
Great.
One thing that I thought was interesting that you said about the ladies' tees, you know, if the man walks past, what are your thoughts on, you know, people call them the forward tees versus the ladies' tees, that it's like a changing jargon that relates to that. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I definitely prefer forward tees because we need everyone to feel comfortable playing the game. Whether it be juniors, whether it be seniors, whether it be men or women. And as I said, you know, oftentimes some women will play from a multitude of tees. I'm an example. There are days I'll play the forward tees. There's days I'll play the middle set of tees. There's days I'll play another set back because I enjoy mixing up the golf course if I'm playing the same course all the time. Other women certainly are the same. And then there's men who now will move forward and go one or two tee boxes up because they're finding they're enjoying the game more. They're hitting more greens. They're shooting lower scores. And that makes it more fun for anybody that plays the game.
Yeah.
So I love the fact that facilities are going away from colors because typically in history, red has always been the forward tee or the ladies tee, quote unquote. And many facilities aren't using colors anymore because of that. And in fact, I've been to a few clubs that have made the red tees now the farthest back tees and the black tees the farthest forward tees, which I think is fantastic. Because, you know, I think as a new generation begins to play this game, they're not going to look at those tees as for any gender specific. They're just going to look at those tees as, well, I enjoy playing there and I play faster from there. I have more fun from there, and this is the tee box I would like to play from. And people aren't putting limitations on that, yeah, which is wonderful.
So you seem to really be coming into your role as the president of the PGA of America at a time when the game of golf is really changing, and it's like a new dawn for golf. So that's a big responsibility, I feel like. So what are you most looking forward to do with this role, and what is going to be like your first order of business?
You know, for us in our governance process, which people probably aren't aware of, it's really an 8-year commitment when you are an officer for the PGA of America. So you're 2 years as secretary, which oversees the membership. We have 29,000 members. And then 2 years as vice president, which oversees the finances of the association, and then 2 years as president, and then 2 years as honorary president. So for me, and for anybody that's been in this role, it's really not about what you're going to accomplish during your presidency. It's really what have we accomplished mm-hmm. as a team over the course of the tenure that I've had that privilege to serve. And for us, and to your point, we're excited. We're excited about the way golf is moving. We're excited about the fact that it's becoming more inclusive. And as I said earlier, we have work to do, and we know that we have challenges, but you know, some of the programs that I'm excited about in the inclusion space is we have a PGA Works Fellowship, which is offering to people of cultural differences opportunity to work in the industry and the game. And we did that because we find it very important for people to see themselves at golf facilities. And so we need our membership to be more diverse, and we're not. So we're working very hard on that. And those are grants where we're paying for these young men and women to work in our sections. We have 41 sections across the country to get them involved not only in the game, but also in the business of the game. And then we started a program called PGA Lead. And PGA Lead is really a mentorship and sponsorship program for young PGA professionals to really mentor them through the governance process. So we're looking to get more women and more diverse candidates in our governance process. And that has been tremendously supported. And we already have a few officers and sections that have been elected out of those PGA Lead class. We're recruiting at the NCAA Division 1, 2, and 3 levels for membership as well. We have our Sports Matter Foundation scholarships that are really going to people who financial need-based so that their children can play PGA Junior League no matter their situation at home. We're incredibly excited about that. And we just have so many programs that we're doing to promote inclusion and to promote diversity in the game that those are some of the things I'm really excited about. We're also doing great work in the employment space. We've added staff internally to really help our PGA professionals be more proactive in their employment, to really showcase the fact and their value at each of their properties to their employers and to their owners. And this particular year, we're coming out with a campaign called PGA Journeys, which is really going to tell the journeys of PGA professionals in diverse classifications that we have, of how they got to where they were, the education process that a PGA professional goes through, and really the value that they bring to the consumer. And we're excited to do that through PSAs and on television, really for the first time. So I'm looking forward to that in 2018 because, again, I'm incredibly biased, but PGA professionals, we really believe, are the direct connection to golf courses and those that play the game. And we really want to showcase the talents that they all have. So those are just some of a few things that we're really excited about moving forward. And obviously, our championships are incredibly exciting this year. We have our KPMG Women's PGA Championship, which I already spoke about. We have our KitchenAid Senior PGA Championship coming up. We have the Ryder Cup, which is going to be in Paris this year. And then we have our 100th PGA Championship at Belle Reve in St. Louis. So it's a big year for our championships. And then, of course, we have our member championships as well, which those of us that are members love to play and compete in. So you know, we have a lot going on at the PGA of America. We're excited about what we're doing. We're incredibly bullish about the game and the advances that we're making within the game. And it's an exciting time to be in leadership.
Well, I know you said that it's not about you and it is a team, but I think that it's so wonderful to have you in a position of leadership because thousands of little girls can look and see their image in a position of leadership in the game of golf. And I think it's so inspiring and so important. And I just can't wait to see everything that you and your team are able to accomplish. And I just wanted to ask you one last question. I always like to ask my guests if they have a what we do moment. And it's basically just a defining moment that's truly made you who you are today, a major lesson learned, something that you'd like to share with listeners that is very important to you.
I do have a defining, first of all, thank you for what you just said, because it's an honor. I cherish what you just said, because if one little girl sees that a woman can be in leadership in golf and follows in those footsteps, then I will be thrilled by that. But it kind of ties into the moment I'm going to share with you. So when I qualified, when I won my section championship, which earned me the exemption to the GHO, I didn't say yes right away. And I didn't say yes for a multitude of reasons that I already stated. I was incredibly busy, full-time job, two young children, was no longer playing on tour at the time, and I was going to go play in this PGA Tour event. So it was one of those things that I was struggling with the decision, and it took me almost 3 months to make the decision to say yes, which some people can't even imagine. And it was my daughter who made that moment that you talk about happen for me, because we were reading a book before she went to bed, and it was all about taking opportunity and not being afraid, taking risks and being brave and stepping out of your comfort zone. And we were reading that book, and she looked at me and she said, "Then Mom, why aren't you playing?" And she was 9 years old. And I said, "You know what? I am playing." And that was the day I decided. And I walked downstairs and I said to my husband, "We're in. I am going to play." And I can tell you that from that day forward, I thank my daughter, because if I could share with anybody listening, there are things that you don't think you can do. There are challenges you don't think you can overcome, but take a step out of your comfort zone, because you'll grow more than you ever imagined you could by being brave enough to take the risk.
Susie, thank you so much for sharing that and for being on the show. I'm so excited to have the whole world listen to this. And I'm just so thankful that you were able to take the time to speak with me today.
Wow, it was wonderful to speak with you. And thank you for having me. Thank you.
Well, I'm looking forward to following you and seeing what happens soon with the PGA of America.
Thanks for listening. Tune in every Wednesday for the latest episode of the What We Do by Kira Kazantsev podcast. Follow at Kira Kazantsev and at What We Do Podcast on Instagram for the latest podcast updates, or go to whatwedo.live or whatwedopodcast.com for our blog, bonus content, and info. Questions? Email us at info@whatwedo.live. See you next week. What We Do by Kira Kazantsev is mixed and mastered by Resonate Recordings. Interested in starting your own podcast? As a What We Do listener, you can go to resonaterecordings.com to get your first episode produced for free. Just let them know we sent you. If you have a podcast or are considering starting one, I can't recommend them enough. They are amazing audio engineers that understand podcasting like no one else. Go to resonaterecordings.com to get your first episode produced for free today.